and Company, 102.5, 106 for the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. We are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. And I hate what I'm about to say. It was a tough weekend as a Predators fan, I'm not going to lie. On Friday, the Predators, I thought, were set to take James Hagans, and they took Brady Martin instead. I get it. I understand it. I know what Barry Trotz saw. In fact, I saw this coming. When I had Barry Trotz on the show Tuesday, and he said the most important thing was the level of competitiveness in a player he was picking, and then I saw The Athletic said the most competitive player was Brady Martin and that it wasn't close, I said, that sounds like it's right up Trotz's alley. In fact, I predicted that's who they were going to pick on Friday. But I hate what I'm about to say. Because it wasn't just the pick on Friday night that a lot of people didn't like, and I understand. But then there was the trade last night. Sissons, Lazan. With all due respect to Colton Sissons' career as a Nashville Predator, I mean, Colton Sissons was a good Predator. You know, that's a guy who, you'll never retire his number, but he's welcome anytime. He should be welcome anytime. He should be remembered as a great Predator. Gave everything he had for this organization. But I'm not going to miss Lazan and Sissons. I don't think your fortunes change one way or another. And I heard Adam just dropping his pants today about Sissons, about how great of a guy he was. And I knew Sissons a little bit. Knew him personally or whatever. He did hit the post in game four of the playoffs against Vancouver, which I'm still not technically over. But I'm not really, that's not the issue. And if Vegas makes it to the second round of the playoffs, and considering the fact that Vegas gets to trade for every single good player in the NHL, today they added Mitch Marner, there's a pretty decent chance that Vegas is going to get to the Western Conference Final. And then your third rounder that you receive as part of this deal would become a second rounder. And second rounders are not nothing. Shea Weber was a second rounder. Roman Josi was a second rounder. But nobody thinks outside of Predatorland that this Nick Hague is very good. Again, when I saw the trade was made, I had never heard of Nick Hague. And Jake, what's the Mikhail Granlund rule?
If you haven't heard of him, he sucks.
If I haven't heard of somebody, they suck. Until proven otherwise. And so I had never heard of Nick Hague. This morning, Robbie Stanley was texting me like, I can't believe that they did this. Adam Vingan says that he felt a smidge better when he heard about the draft pick return. But, and this is what I hate that I'm about to say. When a general manager in sports does the opposite of what everybody else would do all the time, it starts to make me think that either this general manager is smarter than everybody else and nobody in the world gets it, or that team doesn't have a clue. And 99.9% of the time, when a general manager does things or a head coach that runs an operation does things that nobody else would even consider doing, it is a representation that your team does not have a clue. I remember when Bill Belichick hired his ex-defensive coordinator, Matt Patricia, to be the offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots. But Jared, he's Bill Belichick. He knows. Yeah, but this doesn't make any sense. I remember when the Mets hired an agent, Brody Van Wagenen, to be their general manager. And then he immediately traded away the team's first-round draft choice for Robinson Cano, who was old and was Brody Van Wagenen's ex-client. What are you doing? Nico Harrison was an executive at Nike. He becomes the general manager of the Dallas Mavericks and turns around and immediately trades Luka Doncic. Well, as of late, Barry Trotz has had a bunch of these, what are you doing type moves. And I'm not sure what to make of it. And the worst part about all of this isn't that I like Barry Trotz when he makes a what are you doing type move, and it's becoming harder and harder to defend. The hard part for me is that the whole first year Trotz was general manager, he seemed to make a lot of decisions that I thought were good, sound decisions. I'd look at him on the front end, and he'd, you know, have an explanation and say, hey, trust me. And I'd say, okay. And then it would work. Whether it was the decision to pull the Vegas trip, which I actually loved when it happened, whether it was the decision to move on from Matt Duchene because we want to get a winning culture in here, we want to get a tough culture in here, that worked. Retaining the salary on Joe Hanson, I think that was a good thing. Bringing in those Ryan O'Reillys and Luke Shins and the serial winners, Gus Nyquist was an unmitigated success in Barry Trotz's first season. Moving on from John Hines, hiring Andrew Burnett, thought it was a great decision. Still do. But now, Trotz keeps making decisions that I keep sitting there and I'm like, really? And they kind of get a little wackier and wackier as we go. He signed a goalie who never wins in the playoffs and then claimed that he was going to be able to keep the other goalie who they used a first-round draft choice on. And then Trotz got mad at the young goalie who's in the minor leagues in the AHL. Trotz got mad at him when he looked at that contract that your goalie signed and said, well, hold on, wait a minute. There's only one net. I'd like to be traded somewhere else. And Trotz and his guys crossed their arms like, how dare Yaroslav Askarov want to go somewhere that he could play? I'm like, did you not think that was going to happen? 95% of the teams in the league, and I said this to Barry Trotz on the day of the last game of the year this year, 95% of the teams in the league would have fired the head coach after the season the Predators had this past year. I'd say 50% of the teams in the league would have fired Andrew Burnett by Thanksgiving of last year. And yet, for whatever reason, Barry Trotz is keeping this coach who, again, for whatever reason, could not get through to the locker room last year. Whether they listened to him, didn't listen to him, lost the room, didn't, that doesn't matter. He clearly couldn't get through to them for them to play at their potential. And then he brings everybody back. You know, it's one thing if you were to keep the coach but change the core of the team. And it'd be another thing if you fired the coach but said, okay, now we're going to bring in this coach and he's going to work with this core. But he didn't either. Then some of the trades lately are like, wait a minute, what? He dealt Luke Shen and Tommy Novak for Michael Bunting in a fourth-round pick, which, again, I thought was fine. Get rid of Novak. I think he sucks. Shen, whatever. But the next day, Winnipeg turns around and gives trades for Luke Shen for a second-round pick. We're talking about Adam Vingan feeling a smidge better about today's trade because that pick might be a second-round pick. Winnipeg gave away a second-round pick for Luke Shen. I mean, at some point, Barry Trotz has to know the market. The Eric Halla trade. Eric Halla was awful last year. And I understand, you know, hey, we think that he probably is a good fit next to Fedor Svechkov, and so we want to bring in Eric Halla. That's fine. But don't bail the Devils out for a player who had 21 points in 69 games last year. So it just feels like there's a lot of these, what are you doing? Type moves that the Predators have been making. And the response from Barry Trotz is kind of like, hey, trust me, bro. And it's like, yeah, that credit's kind of running out. On some point, I need a move to make, or a move that you've made to work or to make some sense, because for the last year, I don't know what happened the first year. The first year made a lot of moves that made sense. I mean, even the Brady Martin pick, I get that. He's a high compete guy. He was a high-end prospect. A lot of people think he's a Sam Bennett comp. You would take Sam Bennett with the fifth overall pick. Stop acting like you're too good for Sam Bennett. You would. But these moves? This trade, where the entire hockey world is thinking, wait a minute, they gave Nick Hague how much money? Even Greg Wyshynski was like, Well, you know, maybe with the cap going up and Luke Richardson, it'll make the move make sense. Aaron Ekblad is the top pair defenseman for the reigning cup champions. He makes $6.1 million. You're paying this guy, a third pair defenseman, $5.5 million. So even me, a Barry Trotz supporter, a believer that Barry's no-nonsense is pure honesty, should be able to cut through the bull crap. And I know he knows hockey, and they should be able to build a winner. Some of these decisions, I'm like, make it make sense. But I'm also exhausted and tired of having to be explained every move. Whatever happened to the team making a move and saying, oh, that's a good move. Oh, I get what they're trying to do there. That's where I'm starting to struggle a little bit. With where this thing is right now. Again, I like Barry Trotz, and I hate having to say it, but I am so tired of every move needing an explanation. I am so tired of every signing being like Vingan and Robbie and everyone immediately saying, what are they doing? As if I know. That's what I am starting to have a hard time. And this trade today, this seems like, okay, what are you doing? Well, Jared, they're going to move Yossi to the right side, and then he'll be a top pair defenseman. And with the cap going up at $5.5 million, he'll be a... So the guy who was a third pair defenseman in Vegas is going to be a top pair defenseman, and I'm going to take my best defenseman, and I'm going to move him over to the right side. Yes. Yeah, I don't like that explanation. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll hit your phones on all of that here on the program. That's 615-737-1025. And there's one other thing that I'm struggling to figure out with the Predators. We'll get to that. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 for the game. You did a great job in the press conference. The question was asked about, are you going to fix the defense internally or externally? And you did a great job of not answering that question. I was very proud of you.
Yeah, well.
But I got to know, like, is it really going to be, you know, Yossi and Justin Barron? Because I think Barron played better last year, but I don't know.
No, I think he will. I got to give the young man a chance. I think getting a getting Lazan and maybe Yossi moving over to the right would be a possibility that we're looking at, and then finding a partner for Shea is sort of the goal. Get another right D. The whole league's looking for a right D. I moved some right D last year, but we also have some internal things that the Willsbys of the world, and you don't want to hear that, but. I think if we can just tweak one more right side D, then we'll be in good shape.
Okay, that was Barry Trotz last week. So now Lazan's out, and Hague for double the money is in. And this doesn't, again, solve the big issue here that I guess this is what makes this trade so hard for me to understand. You're overpaying for Nick Hague, who was a third-pair defenseman for the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, there is an argument to be made that Vegas, with Noah Hanifin and with Braden McNabb and with Shea Theodore and that group, that they are very, very good on defense. So Nick Hague is probably better than a third-pair guy. Fine. You can make that argument. You can have that. And it's an overpay. And when it comes to the overpay, you can argue, well, the cap's going up. I mean, that doesn't really matter to me. Aaron Ekblad, again, is $6.1 million for the next 8 years for the Florida Panthers. And Aaron Ekblad, even with the cap going up, is still going to be $6.1 million. So I don't really buy that one either, but okay, fine. You can make that argument if you want to. Cap's going up, and he's really more of a second-pair left-shot defenseman than he is a third-pair left-shot defenseman. But the problem is that he's still a left-shot defenseman. They need right-shot defensemen. Because Justin Barron is terrible, and Nick Blankenberg is the definition of a Scarbini. Just a random whatever. played a handful of games for a couple of years in Columbus, and he got called up from Milwaukee because he had to, and he had some nice moments, but come on now. That's Nick Blankenberg. Those are the two NHL-level right shots that the Nashville Predators have. The one guy they're going to add into the mix this year, Tanner Mullendike, who is their first-round pick or one of their two first-round picks in 2023 and is knocking on the door of being ready for the NHL, is a left-shot defenseman. So right now, just looking at the defense they have, it's going to be Josi, left-shot defenseman, Shea, left-shot defenseman, Haig, left-shot defenseman, Mullendike, left-shot defenseman, Spencer Stastny, left-shot defenseman, and Justin Barron, who is terrible. I don't think that fixes the defense. Well, we can move Josi over to the right side and put Haig up on the left side, which is what we did with Ryan McDonough when he was here. Are you trying to tell me that Nick Haig is Ryan McDonough? And you say you need a right-handed shot, a guy to go with Brady Shea? Don't you put Justin Barron with him. Justin Barron stinks. So I would have understood the trade and the overpay if Haig was a right shot defenseman. But he's not. He's a left shot defenseman. And that's where I struggle with this move today more than anything else. You know, a lot of people are mad that the Predators didn't draft Blake Fidler, because Blake Fidler, Vern Fidler's kid, was a right-shot defenseman, and a lot of people thought he was going to be a first-round pick, and the Predators passed on him three times in the first round and then passed on him in the second round, and then he was taken. And, Jared, we need a right-shot defenseman. That doesn't bother me, because Blake Fidler is probably 3 or 4 years away from playing in the NHL, so that doesn't bother me. But right now, you need a right-shot defenseman. Now, I'm not saying give up the world for Noah Dobson and give him $10 million, but I am saying you need to get a guy who shoots right-handed. Apparently, according to Pierre LeBrun, Rasmus Anderson, the best right shot on the market, wants to go to Vegas. 4 hours ago, Pierre said, Rasmus Anderson's preferred trade destination is the Vegas Golden Knights. The Flames defenseman possesses a modified no-trade clause and will become a free agent in 2026. Vegas and Calgary have had numerous discussions over the past week, but still, there's a no. So, can you not get in the market for him? You need a right shot defenseman. That's just me. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025 here on the program. By the way, it'll be, is it Nick Roy or Nick Waugh to Toronto from Vegas, Jake?
I believe it's Waugh.
Okay. He's going to Toronto in the Vegas Marner deal, which is why Vegas needed Colton Sissons. Let's go to Michael, who's up next here on the program. Michael, thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. You go ahead.
I appreciate it. Well, you touched on half of it already, talking about the left-handed defenseman. Yeah, I was going to go down that, too. It blows my mind, too. But I want to ask you about the Brady Martin pick. Look, you know, did I want, you know, someone more flashy? Yes. But Trotsky had talked about taking swings. You know, this guy was projected to go 7 by NHL.com to Boston, and we picked him at 5. So, yeah, he doesn't have the high-end supposed ceiling, and I know that's what Trotsky said last year when he got CERN. He wanted a home run hit, high ceilings, but, you know, only 2 picks earlier. So is it that bad a pick in your opinion? You know, like when you look at it that way, where he was slotted to go was like 6 to 8, and he went 5th. So,
no.
You know?
It's not. I do not think that the Brady Martin pick, I wouldn't have done it. Michael, thank you for your call. I would not have done it. I would have drafted Higgins. But I do not think it was a reach, and I do not think it was a bad pick. Where we sit today. I mean, I'll put it to you like this. How many legitimate NHL prospects do the Predators have right now? And this is just off the top of my head, you know, of what they have or don't have. So off the top of my head, top prospects. So, Jake, let's say Evangelista and Younger. So Evangelista counts as a young guy that they're still kind of bringing up. Fair?
Yeah, it's fair. He's still a young guy.
So that's the 2020 draft class and older. Evangelista, Svechkov, LaRue, Kemmel, David Edstrom, Reed Schaefer. Trotz really likes Ozzie Weisblatt, but I'm not sure he's much of a prospect. But screw it, we'll count him. Igor Surin, Teddy Stiga, and Brady Martin. That's 10. Now, add Riker Lee, first-round pick, got to count him. That's 11. What have I said? For every five prospects that you think you have, think Tomasino, Cody Glass type, for every five prospects you think you have, two at best will pop. Maybe one. So of that group, you're probably going to end up with two players. Now, Brady Martin's probably going to be one of them. But let's just say three, because it's four draft classes and you've got all those first rounders, and like Edstrom was a high second rounder, etc. Then on defense, there's Mullendijk. There's the kid they took in the first round the other day, Cam, whatever his name is.
Reed.
Cam Reed. I kept wanting to say Cam Robinson, but I'm like, no, that's the football guy. Cam Reed and Andrew Gibson. That's three. So you've got about 14 guys. We all know that Forsberg and Saros are not going anywhere long term. Same with Brady Shea. So if you think that this kid, Brady Martin, is your future captain, which is what I think Barry Trotz thinks today. You know, I don't know if we're going to have Barry on the program this week or not. I don't know if Barry's going to be mad that we crapped on this trade. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be that way. You know, he seems to not really care. But who knows? But I am going to ask him, like, do you expect Brady Martin to be the next captain of the Nashville Predators? Because I think he does. So if you get a Selkie levels number one center who is your captain, that's worth the fifth overall pick in the draft. The truth is, the way the NHL draft works, most guys that are on your top lines were picked 1, 2, 3, 4. One texter says Martin was projected 11th. Not in the mock draft I looked at right before. Corey Promnan had the Predators taking him at 5. And said that he said, this was what he said in his final mock draft. I think they likely go Desnoyer if he's available at 5. Otherwise, my bet is between Martin and McQueen for them. McQueen bears some risk at 5, but Nashville did a lot of background work on him. And Trotz was quoted this week as saying he thinks McQueen could be a number one center, which he did say last week on our program. So don't say he was projected to go 11th. He wasn't. 615-737-1025. Phones coming up next, plus the one thing that I am convinced Barry Trotz was going to do, and I'm not the only one. We'll hit that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106 for the game.
Hey, Barry, you know, we hear about all the different rumors, draft picks, who's trading who, who's trying to move up, who's moving back. I mean, you had a number of picks in the first round this year. Were there a lot of phone calls? Were there a lot of discussions?
There was a tremendous amount of discussions. I was on the phone after he made the fifth pick, and I had, we've done some preliminary work on the front end, but I was on the phone probably from about pick 7 through 18, I think. Mm-hmm. And I actually had a deal, and our player fell through in the, fairly early. The player that we were trying to get another player within the, I'll say, the top 12, 13 picks, and we had a deal in place, but one team grabbed the player, and we had to move on from there. But there's still some other guys that were on our board, and I worked my way up, I think, to 18 or 19, and then we already had a pick at 23. So
there you go. That was Barry on NHL Network with EJ Raddick, and I wasn't the only one that said this, but I heard that on Saturday, and I said he was trying to get Roger McQueen. So Barry talked about McQueen being a wild card and not knowing where he was going to go, and talking about, hopefully his medicals check out. And I said to him, I said, well, you've seen the medicals. He's like, I have seen the medicals. And then he talked about his family and everything else. Let me just say this. I don't know what the trade would have been. It clearly would have been involving 23 and 26. So it would have involved what ultimately ended up being Cam Reed and Riker Lee. And I have no idea if Cam Reed or Riker Lee are going to be any good anyways. People really seem to like Cam Lee or Cam Reed. But the reason I say this is I don't know what else it would have cost. I don't know. He would. I believe he would have moved up with Pittsburgh. Barry's done a lot of business with Pittsburgh since he's been the general manager. Kyle Dubas, and he worked out the trade last year for Cody Glass. They worked out the trade for Michael Bunting. They ended up dumping off Tomasino to Pittsburgh. So I think there's a good relationship there. And Pittsburgh, I think, was at 11 and 12. And so I don't know if Pittsburgh was in on McQueen or not or whatever, but my gut feeling tells me that the Predators would have made a deal with Pittsburgh, they would have moved up, and they would have taken Roger McQueen. And that would have been a huge, huge swing. Big guy with a bad back, like 6'5", but an elite skater when healthy. But he would have, and I would have supported that measure. Assuming that they did not trade a first rounder unprotected in next year's draft. If they had traded the two first rounders plus, let's say, a second rounder, or the two first rounders plus a left shot defenseman to move up where the Penguins picked, and they would have taken McQueen if he didn't go to Anaheim at 9, if they had done that, people would have said, oh, but he's got a bad back and it's Caleb Farley and it's, that's okay. The pick that has to hit is Martin at 5. That's the one that has to hit. Everything else, you can take your big swing. If Martin's your top line center and McQueen's got a bad back and turns into Caleb Farley, I don't think we look at it that way. So let me just state for the record, people don't get in trouble for things they don't do or things that haven't happened yet. But I do just want to say that if Trotz had made that move to try to have his cake and eat it too, I would have supported it. I would have supported it. 615-737-1025. One texter says, I'm stuck between selling off as many veterans as you can and getting the young guys up and playing. I don't think you're stuck between that. I think they're stuck between that. One texter says, dear Lord, it's right tackle for you all over again. If we are in this situation before the season starts, then you can hit Barry Trotz hard. What, if they don't have any right shot defensemen? Like, that's supposed to change? How much cap space after the move they made today where they gave a third pair defenseman $600,000 less than Aaron Ekblad got? How much cap space do they have now? And they retain the Colton Sissons? This says, according to Puckopedia, $12 million in cap space. What, are they going to go get Rasmus Anderson? One texter said, why get a right shot defenseman when you've got 7 left shot defensemen? I used to not care about that either. But the more I've talked about it, the more it's an issue. They thought Brady Shea and Yossi could play together. And after about 3 weeks of watching it happen, they said, yeah, no. And now Barry Trotz said, well, we'll try to move Yossi over to the right side and we want to get a right shot pair for Shea. And it's like, well, I guess that didn't work out. Justin says, why has Trotz regressed? He started out strong, but he stopped listening to his other counsel. He has just fallen in love with power, and is he now drunk on it? Has he lost his marbles? I just want to know what made him change his tact and become the league's dumping ground to boot. It does really feel like, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but it really does feel like Barry Trotz is the general manager you run to when you're trying to rip somebody off. When you're trying to take advantage of somebody and you're trying to get out of a contract you don't want, you're trying to get something retained that you don't need, you go to Barry Trotz. Because Vegas did it today, and Pittsburgh did it when they turned around and flipped Luke Shen for a second rounder. And the Devils did it with Eric Halla. It just kind of feels like when you want to take advantage of somebody, you call the Predators. And I'm not saying that we'll look back on this 5 years from now and say, wow, you know, they really took advantage of it. Because Michael Bunting, I actually liked his game. I want to say it was the Maple Leaf game I went to last year when I saw Michael Bunting play and get his ass in front of the net and actually be hard to play against. And I thought, wow, I actually kind of like this guy. After everybody, myself included, crapped on Trotz and the Predators the day of the deadline when Luke Shen got traded for a fourth-round pick on Tuesday and went for a second-round pick on Wednesday. But at the same time, I'd like to win a trade when it happens. Not saying that's the end-all, be-all. Again, that's like Barry Trotz saying, hey, last year I was the winner of the year on July 1, and look at how we did, i.e., it doesn't matter what people think in the offseason. I get that. But I would like to make a deal where instead of having to explain it, it's like, okay, this, trust me, this is going to work. And I don't have to trust you that it's going to work, but I have to just, you know, it's, oh, yeah, that trade makes sense. One texter says, is Yossi even the top guy, and does he even come back 100%? So Trotz said on the program on Tuesday last week that he wants to be good next year. And I can't run from that. Once he says that, I forget about 2028, and I'm worried about next year too. They seem to think Yossi's coming back. If you were to get the diagnosis that Roman Yossi is not going to be the same player, then don't you almost have to kind of go to your veterans and say, hey, guys, Roman's not getting any better. We're probably better off tearing the whole thing down. Stinking and getting Bedard's cousin next year, who's supposed to be a superstar, and just moving forward that way. So as of right now, I'm going to say I think Yossi's your top guy. But I'd like to put him on the left side with a real right shot defenseman who isn't Justin Barron. One texter says the Brady Martin pick screams Mike Vrabel. Well, what have I said about Mike Vrabel when it comes to his worth? You've never heard me say Mike Vrabel is a bad coach. I've never said it, and I don't believe it. I think Mike Vrabel is a great coach. I do. But I said this the day John Robinson got fired, and I said it in the offseason, and I believe it to this day. Mike Vrabel should not be picking players in the NFL because Mike Vrabel is not trained to pick players in the NFL. Mike Vrabel played the NFL. And he's been a linebacker coach. He's been a D coordinator, and he's been a head coach. He's never been a scout. He's never been a personnel assistant. He's never done any of that. Now, Trotz did have that half a year with Poyle, where he was kind of, you know, waiting in the wings to be the future general manager, which is more than I can say for Vrabel. But my big issue for Vrabel is I don't think he can pick the players. And we'll see in New England. They picked a tackle with short arms who does kind of have a Brady Martin vibe. They picked him fourth overall. And everybody says, oh, no, you'll see. So let me see. But I agree. There is kind of a Vrabel element to this of, hey, if you give me 110% and this guy's going to give me 110%, I will coach you into greatness. There is something to that with this pick, which is, again, I think a pick that was made by Barry Trotz, the coach. One texter says, my question for you is if next season is not successful, like Trotz said he is hoping for, will you call for his job? Is it a cop-out that I say on this program, nobody gets in trouble for something that hasn't happened? And Barry Trotz has not had a bad year yet for this upcoming season, so I'm not ready to say what I will say at the end of the year. A lot of times people say, oh, you're just saying this so that you can say this and you can say that and you can... And I'm really not. I just kind of react whenever I see it. However I feel, I turn around and that's the reaction. So I don't know how I'm going to feel at the end of the year, or the middle of the year, or whatever. But I'll just say, today I'm not very happy. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025, here on the program. There is one thing I have just got to get off my chest. Did you know that NBA free agency started today? Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 through the game.
LeBron James is opting in to his nearly $53 million player option for the 2025-2026 season. So what we do know is he will be playing a record 23rd NBA season. Still not sure whether he's going to play one more season or he has multiple years left, but I'm told he wants to compete for a championship next season, and he is uncertain about the Lakers roster moving forward. And my understanding is James is supportive of the Lakers positioning themselves around Luka Doncic, building for the future. And Rich Paul told me this morning, the Clutch Sports CEO, that the Lakers have been true partners of his and LeBron James for 8 seasons while he's been there. But as we see right there, he also told me the franchise is going to do what's best for them. They understand that they have to do what's best for the long term. And this adds an interesting wrinkle here in free agency. LeBron James is evaluating how he wants to finish his career.
Okay, that was Shams Charania on ESPN. NBA free agency opened, I believe, 49 minutes ago. And I know we've been wall-to-wall hockey today. We had one little football trade segment, and I know not many people care about the NBA, but I have to get this off my chest. Think of this as like a Rex rant. You know, just I got to complain about this. So yesterday I saw the headline, LeBron James opts in for $52.6 million, which is a lot of money, but the NBA makes a lot of money, and LeBron is certainly very, very good. And I always love it when a player makes some ridiculous amount of money like this, because then I go tell my dad, and my dad always is like, why pay players so much money for? But I was reading a quote in the article at ESPN, and it was basically what Sham said right there, which is along the lines of LeBron is going to be watching the Lakers. He wants to be somewhere he can win. Basically, the veiled threat of, if the Lakers don't make moves to win, then LeBron's going to demand a trade. And I must have read that line, not that I care about LeBron, but I must have read that line like 7 times. Because something really bothered me about this. LeBron's making $53 million next year. For 1 year, $53 million. And LeBron wants to watch the Lakers build him a team to win a championship. He wants to make sure that the Lakers are win now. Isn't that why they're paying him $53 million? Isn't that, hey, I want to show that you're committed to winning. Okay, I'm paying you $53 million to win. That's your job. Your job is to win. That's what I'm paying you for. That's what the money's for. And then it hit me. I had an epiphany. This is why everybody that hates the NBA, that loved Michael Jordan, hates the NBA today. Because Michael Jordan and Kobe knew it was their job to win. What are you paid here for? I'm paid to win. I'm not paid to sell shoes. I'm not paid to score a bunch of points. I'm paid to win. So if that means I need to pass the ball to Robert Horry or I need to pass the ball to Steve Kerr at the end of a big game, I'll do it. If that means, as Michael Jordan said in The Last Dance, if that meant I got to get in your ass, then I'll get in your ass. But not LeBron. LeBron wants the money. And LeBron wants the basketball, and LeBron wants the attention, and LeBron wants all this, but he doesn't want the accountability of having to win. And that's the problem with today's NBA. All those guys are the same way. They lose, and it's, who can I blame first? Kevin Durant. It's not, I need to be better. It's always about, hey, I can blame this guy, blame the coach. Blame the team, blame the owner, blame them all. Don't blame me. Again, when I hear somebody that decides to play for $53 million, say, hey, I want you to build a winning team around me, I think that's your job. Your job is to win when you make that kind of money. When you're a star basketball player, your job is to win, to lead your team to victory. It's not to lead your team to a triple-double. It's not to lead your team to a scoring title or to make an all-star team. Your job is to win. And LeBron James doesn't win. Not anymore. And Kevin Durant didn't even make the playoffs last year. But again, these guys, they want all the attention. They want all the fame. They want all the money. And I just think it's so embarrassing. And that's why I think most people are turned off when it comes to basketball. That's why when a Game 7 used to do 30 million viewers, Game 7 does 16 million viewers now. Because we just look at these players and say, oh, wow, $53 million, and you're still not happy. Also, one final thing. We've talked a lot of NHL draft today. And a lot of my theories when it comes to the NHL draft, and a lot of my takes and feelings are all about what the Predators did and have nothing to do with the pageantry of the NHL draft. And a lot of people are going to blame it on this decentralized format. That's nonsense. The NBA draft, the NFL draft, the Major League Baseball draft, they don't have all the teams there either. And none of them put on the gong show that the NHL put on Friday night. That is the most do better I have ever seen of any draft. 5 minutes into the thing, and we have Tony Finau, the golfer, making a woolly mammoth chant that none of us have ever heard of. And I understand the idea of having celebrities say, oh, I love hockey, like Charles Barkley, or the Happy Gilmore thing with Adam Sandler. I get that. But other than that, let's let the commissioner make the picks. Let's act like a big boy league. Because that was very minor league of the NHL Friday night. It was a train wreck. That's it for us. We are out of here. Stillman and Company, Robbie Stanley tomorrow on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll have the full report as to what he saw with Brady Martin and all the other guys they drafted at development camp today. I'm fascinated by that. And that's going to do it for us. We'll see you all tomorrow at 2.